Good morning. This is Neil Strasser with the CBS World News Roundup. Chief inflation fighter Alfred Kahn predicted the news would be bad, and it was. The government said today that producer prices, the measurement of wholesale price behavior, rose another 1% in March, the same as in February. Meat, oil, and gasoline, the major culprits. The White House, in the meantime, concedes the energy conservation proposals that President Carter will make tonight in a speech to be heard over many of these CBS radio network stations will add to inflation by pushing up oil prices. More on the proposals from Lee Thornton.
According to administration sources, President Carter will announce plans to decontrol domestic oil prices, lifting the lid gradually, beginning on June 1st, and ending controls by September 1981. Accompanying that action will be a request to Congress to approve a plan to tax oil companies to prevent excess profits. Mr. Carter is expected to propose that those tax revenues be used as rebates for those least able to afford rising energy costs. It's believed the president will stay away from mandatory oil conservation measures, but will stress the importance of greater reliance on alternate sources of fuel. What Mr. Carter will say about nuclear power remains a question, but White House officials will not rule out the possibility that he might use the occasion to announce creation of a special panel to look into the accident at Three Mile Island. Lee Thornton, CBS News, the White House.
The investigation of what went wrong at Three Mile Island is one thing. There also is still the problem of figuring out how best to finish the job of shutting down the reactor. Gary Shepard has more from Middletown, Pennsylvania.
Nuclear experts here have been keeping reactor number 2 in a stable condition for the past several days as they consider how to achieve cold shutdown in the safest possible way. The most likely plan was submitted by Babcock & Wilcox, the company that built the nuclear reactor. But if it is chosen, it will take a while before the core temperature is brought to below the boiling point. Officials of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission say it requires 10 days to fully implement. First, scientists will continue degasification of the primary cooling system, which is like removing bubbles from champagne. It may be several more days before a final decision is made. Meanwhile, experts are concerned about the intense levels of radiation inside the containment building of the stricken reactor, levels that are so high, they are slowly destroying the sensitive instruments that are needed to monitor what's going on. Gary Shepard, CBS News, Middletown, Pennsylvania.
A nuclear power plant and two conventional generators at Turkey Point in Florida shut themselves down automatically overnight when short-circuiting transformers caused a loss of power for a time to some residents from Fort Lauderdale and West Palm Beach on the east coast of Florida to St. Petersburg and Sarasota on the west coast. The Florida Power and Light Company blames the recent dry weather, which has caused a salt buildup on power lines. They resumed and ended all in one day. Contract talks between United Airlines and the Machinist Union collapsed last night, indicating no quick end to the strike, which has now grounded United, the nation's largest air carrier, for 6 days. With the stoppages in the trucking industry entering the fifth day, negotiators returned to the bargaining table for the first time today. But Barry Serafin in Washington reports the outlook there also uncertain.
No one is sure what effect the Teamsters limited strike and management's subsequent lockout will have on the talks, but the guessing is both sides are still testing each other. Says an administration official, there's a macho thing going on here. While both sides indicated that major differences remained when the negotiations broke down last weekend, government sources insist a settlement was close. Even though management says its last offer amounted to about a 10% a year wage and benefit increase, administration officials contend that by not counting some costs, that offer actually fell within President Carter's 7% a year wage guidelines. The union's last demand was described as a little above those guidelines. A principal hang-up has been management uncertainty about whether it could compensate for added labor costs by increasing freight rates. The Interstate Commerce Commission had reportedly been taking a hard line against increases above the guidelines, but in what is described as a clarification, the agency now, while not promising an automatic okay, says, in effect, any rate request which can be justified will be granted. In any event, for now, the administration's goal is still a negotiated settlement rather than a court-ordered return to work. Barry Serafin, CBS News, Washington.
It is the death he says he prefers to a life in prison. But his mother and others are still trying to keep an Alabama convict from going to the electric chair at 1 minute past midnight tonight. Bruce Hall reports from Holman Prison in Alabama.
Convicted slayer John Lewis Evans has asked for a steak and a six-pack of beer for his final meal before his scheduled execution shortly after midnight. He will be given the steak, but prison officials say he will not get the beer. Evans says he is ready to die and has repeated his earlier request that no more attempts be made to save his life. However, his mother has authorized an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, claiming that Evans is no longer competent to make a decision as to whether he should fight the execution or not. Evans has told his attorney to go into court and ask them not to consider his mother's request. If that legal attempt fails to halt the execution, attorneys representing a variety of groups opposed to capital punishment plan to try other moves in the courts, but they admit they have little chance of blocking the execution. Bruce Hall, CBS News, at Holman Prison in Alabama.
Police in Los Angeles have arrested a 29-year-old former convict named Bobby Lee Maxwell and say they now believe he may be the so-called Skid Row stabber, the person believed responsible for at least 10 stabbing deaths in a one-month period last year. The final action in ratification of the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel is expected before this day is over, with a vote to approve by the Egyptian parliament almost a foregone conclusion. Egypt's president opened the debate, as we hear from Doug Sager in Cairo.
Anwar Sadat opened parliamentary debate on the peace treaty, calling it the peak of his political achievement. Later today, Prime Minister Khalil will formally present the treaty and its appended documents for a vote, approving or rejecting the entire package. Sadat gave parliament a point-by-point defense of his diplomacy, addressed to both domestic and Arab critics. Although he referred to his Arab opponents as dwarfs, Sadat's address was conciliatory, arguing that the treaty achieves more for the Palestinians than 30 years of war and terrorism. But Sadat also warned his radical opponents that he will not turn the other cheek. Any terrorism against Egypt, Sadat said, will be repaid double-fold. Sadat told Parliament that Egypt's internal problems, food, housing, and infrastructure, must be linked to their vote on the treaty, too. And addressing both his domestic and his Arab critics, Sadat said, "Let us forget the bickering of the past." Doug Sager for CBS News, Cairo.
Sadat said of the Arab ambassadors who've been pulled out of Cairo, well, goodbye. If they want to return, well, welcome. Terrorists set off two bombs on the island of Cyprus today, one outside a building housing the Israeli embassy, another near the office of the Egyptian airline. Both blasts caused extensive damage, but there were no injuries. Invading Tanzanian and Ugandan exile forces seem on the verge of the final push against Uganda's capital today. But still, reports Randy Daniels from Nairobi, the situation is at best confused.
The capital, Kampala, is reported quiet, and some shops are now open. One diplomat said he went to the central marketplace this morning and for the first time in days purchased fresh meat and vegetables. This amid claims of impending starvation in the city by Ugandan dissidents. The police barracks at Makende on the outskirts of Kampala, reportedly captured by anti-Amin forces yesterday, were reported calm and under Ugandan control by another diplomat who visited the compound today. Reports that Entebbe International Airport has also fallen to Tanzanian troops and Ugandan guerrillas after a heavy artillery battle have been dismissed by diplomatic sources in Kampala. What is clear is that Kampala is being encircled by anti-government forces, and Amin's troops, along with 2,000 Libyan soldiers, are regrouping near the city of Jinja, about 50 miles east of the capital. Some Ugandan troops are still in Kampala and appear to be prepared to resist the takeover. Randy Daniels, CBS News, Nairobi.
Tanzania said today that a supersonic Libyan bomber flying in support of President Idi Amin's embattled Ugandan regime attacked northwestern Tanzania but caused no damage. The report said the bombing, the second of the war by a Libyan bomber, took place Tuesday in a forest 8 miles from the town of Bukoba on the western shores of Lake Victoria. The big U.S. aircraft carrier Ranger and a Liberian-registered tanker have collided off Singapore. The tanker is reported listing and dead in the water, leaking some oil. U.S. officials say the Ranger suffered a relatively small gash in its hull, but is not taking on water, and there were no injuries aboard the carrier, which is returning to the Philippines. There is no information yet on the cause of the collision.